Hi, family. I'm Judith, and I'm an addict. And I thank God for being here tonight. I thank the CPRCNA for trusting me with a topic to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. And that's just what I'm going to do. And, you know, this is not my first time sharing at a convention. Matter of fact, I share at conventions a lot. But it's something about this day, this topic, this convention that's kind of got me feeling real different on the inside. You know, I sat down with the God of my understanding a couple of weeks ago and asked him what it is that he would have me to share tonight. Because, you see, God knows something that I don't know. He knew exactly who was going to be in this seat. And he knew out of the little bit of time that I have to share exactly what it is out of my experience, strength, and hope that I need to share in order to bring a message home to you, a message of recovery, a clear Narcotics Anonymous message. And it's a burden. It's a burden to be entrusted with such a task. But it's nothing like the burden when I was running around after that crack. Nothing like that. And so I'm here today, charged with emotion and ready to do a work in honor of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, when they first gave me that topic, matter of fact, when they first gave me the topic, it was smiling on the outside and crying on the inside. Which is the same thing as when you're crying, you're hurting, and when you're hurting, you're crying. And the very first thing when I heard that topic, it made me remember that song by Smokey Robinson. And if we got any old schoolers in the house, we can relate. You know that song that went something like, Tears of a Clown. You know, if there's a smile on my face, it's only there trying to fool the public. But when it comes down to fooling you, now that's quite a different subject. Don't let my sad expression, my glad expression, give you the wrong impression. Because really, I'm sad. You're gone and it hurts me so bad. Like a clown, I pretend to be glad. And then it ends up and says, there's some sad things known to man, but it ain't too much sadder than. All right, I knew I had somebody up in here that could relate. And when they gave me that topic, that's the first thing that it made me remember, made me think of. And I'm on such an incredible journey in my life right now. And just to qualify myself, I grew up in Philadelphia. I was the youngest of four. I got teased and picked on a lot when I was a little girl, you know, by my siblings. And so it kind of made me grow up feeling like something was always missing. My father was an alcoholic, but the family didn't know of that term, so they didn't use that term. They just said he drank a lot. And they also said that he just drank because he wanted to and he could stop if he wanted to. And then years later, when I got hooked on drugs, that same train of thought permeated into my life. And my family was like, oh, she's just getting high because she's trifling. And she wants to. She can stop if she wants to. And that wasn't true. Although I was the one who had made that conscious choice to take that first drug, I thought that the power to stop rested on me. But it didn't. And so that same train of thought was that I wanted to stop, but couldn't. Because what happened was that one day, I walked into a crack house in Camden, New Jersey. And when I walked in there, I was a user. But by the time I left, I had went straight from being a user to an addict because the line is so thin that it's invisible. And I didn't know what had come over me because I wasn't in touch with the concept of powerlessness. How could a tiny white substance have dominion or authority over me? Because, you see, I graduated from college with honors. And I knew everything. You couldn't tell me nothing. I remember a drug dealer that I was dealing with at the time gave me some powder. And I went over to some friend's house and let them turn it into rocks. And when he came to that crack house in Camden, he told me that I was going to get hooked. And he tried to slap it out of my hand. And I was like, what do you mean? You know, you're tripping. You know, I'm not going to get hooked. You know, and he said, you think you know everything. And it went right over my head because I did think I knew everything. But how many of you know that just a little while later, I realized that I didn't know it all, at all? And so I began, once I got hooked on crack, I remember wanting so bad to stop, but I couldn't because I was caught up in the grip of addiction. I remember thinking that I could maybe wean myself off of it. So I remember getting a big paycheck and going down to the crack house in Camden, New Jersey, telling myself I'm going to get just one. Y'all know the story. Before the night was over, I had smoked up that whole paycheck. Time and time and time again. And I was hurting real bad on the inside. And I had a little girl who at the time was 6 years old that I pawned off on my mother while I did that stuff. And I justified that, well, at least she's in the capable hand of my sisters and my mothers. But for real, it was abandonment. Because that's all addiction is abandonment. The word derelict means that we have abandoned ourselves. And I had abandoned myself. And I wanted so bad to stop, but I couldn't. I remember Christmases putting the toys on layaway at the Walmart. Then, when the money ran out, go back to the Walmart and the Kmart, get the toys off of layaway, but then tell myself that I would be able to restore that layaway, those layaway items, the next payday. But how many of y'all know I never made it back? So now here's Christmas. And here's a little girl waiting on a Christmas, and I'm too ashamed to even go to my mother's house. Too ashamed to pick up the phone and say I'm hooked on drugs and I can't make it. Because what I had done was I tried that geographic cure. I was born in Philly, migrated to New Jersey, a little town called Morristown, which was the suburbs of Camden. Yeah. And then as the geographic cure for my birthday, almost like 26 or 27 years ago to the date, I knew that I was tired of hurting. And so my birthday present to myself was to move here to Maryland. And although I didn't get clean immediately, I know it was God's purpose and will that I moved from that area here, because I knew I would have died in Camden. And so I moved here. And when I moved here, I immediately found people, places, and things that were using. Immediately. Okay, so here I am off to the races again. You know, abandoned from my family. And like I said, I wouldn't show up for birthdays. I wouldn't show up for Christmases because I was too ashamed to call home and say there's too many hit houses in between here and the train station to make it. So here I got a little girl in Jersey that's abandoned. And I tried many, many times to get clean. I got clean back in 92, and I thought that I would never pick up a drug again. But somehow at 22 months, I found myself with that pipe back in my hand. But I had enough hope at that time. I knew that the same God who had got me clean then could, and that he had the power to get me clean again. And so I prayed, and I prayed, and I prayed. Who in this room can remember praying, even in the midst of getting high? And I mean, and I had all kind of prayers. I mean, they varied based on what the situation was. Sometimes that prayer was, oh God, if you just let this hit be good, this will be the last time, I promise. And one time when I got real high and got scared, I was like, oh God, if you just not let my heart have an attack or go into cardiac arrest, this will be the last time I get high, I promise. And then there was the prayer that saw me through. And that prayer was, oh God, you've gotten me clean before, and I know you got the power to get me clean again. And if you get me clean again, I promise that this clean time won't just be used for me, but it'll be used to help other addicts along the way. And I remember praying that prayer. And I remember meaning it with all of my heart. And so I got clean, December 13, 1996. And if I keep doing what I'm doing this December, I will be celebrating 16 years clean. And I'm so grateful for that, because you're looking at a girl who could never even put 16 minutes together. Couldn't, because I was locked and loaded in crack addiction and couldn't get out. And when I came back, I share all of the time, when I came back in this room December 13, 1996, I didn't come in here running and skipping or hopping. I flew into these rooms on the TWA, a thoroughly whipped ass. I mean thoroughly whipped. I mean sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired of me. And because only the dying will listen, I became willing to listen in a way I had never been willing to listen before. I got a sponsor again, but this time she was no longer in name only. This time I began taking instructions from her, whether I wanted to or not, whether it made sense or not. If there were times when I would bet money that my idea was the better way, Still out of a simple hope and trust, I began willing to do what she and my network told me to do because I wanted recovery real bad. The gift of submission had kicked in. Not doing things that I thought made sense, but doing the things that I didn't think made sense. Just trusting somebody. And I got an epiphany. I got a revelation at 4 months clean. And it was maybe if I just leave my ego at the door when I go to meetings, just maybe if I take some suggestions from my network and my sponsor, even if they don't make sense, just maybe I'll be able to stay clean a day at a time. And that marked a turning point in my life. And as I said, I haven't found it necessary to pick up ever since then. So the amazing thing about recovery in my life is once I got restored to the wholeness of no longer getting high, my ability to bounce back happened overnight. I began regaining things. I began getting a job again. I began getting money in the bank and not being broke on Fridays when I got paid. I began getting stabilized where I went from renting apartments to renting houses to buying houses. I got to the place where I was able to let go of the toxic man that wasn't worth having. Anybody ever had one of them before? I began willing to let go of them. Because along this journey, I learned that when I'm loving me, I get the chance to make some different choices in my life. And so here I am, you know, and I'm on this road to recovery, and things are going really, really well. And so like I said, I was able to share with people that, you know, I moved from homelessness to homes ownership and helping other people along the way. I had moved from being unemployable to now I'm an employer. And I'm about to write a book called Will the Real Employee Please Stand Up? So that's another topic another day. I was able to move from brokenness on the inside to moving to the place where I had some sincere peace and joy. But something happened along the way. And when I first got this topic that spoke about hurting on the inside and smiling on the outside, I thought I'd be able to get up here and kick a profound message about how I wasn't hurting on the inside no more and how everything was, you know, although everything wasn't perfect, how everything was well, but God got jokes. And as I began meditating, not just on this topic, but just meditating where I was, it got revealed to me that there are many different areas in my life right now where I'm still hurting on the inside, and I'm hurting on the inside big time. But the fact is that it came, this insidious disease, it came in a different way, shape, and form, okay? I can relate to how it is to hurt on the inside because I'm crack-ridden. But something happened along the way to my journey to success. Something happened along the way as God gave me the gift of creativeness and inventiveness, and right now I'm in the middle of building a nonprofit, you know, a multi-million dollar nonprofit, And something happened along the way wherein now I'm so overwhelmed because I got, you know, juggling so many things. I mean, we're hiring people like crazy, but my plate is full. And there's a saying that goes that when you got so much stuff on your plate that you can't see the plate, your plate is too full. And without my knowing it, you know, frustration starts sneaking in the back door. Okay, my peace starts slipping out the back door. So the same way I walked into that crack house one day in Camden, New Jersey, a user, and walked out an addict, I found myself one day a person filled with peace, and as I let the worries and cares of other things kind of take precedence over the self-care piece, I found myself bound with frustration the same way I used to be bound with the coke. And I found myself bound and burdened with the juggling and the lack of balance that had slowly but surely taken over my life. I remember just this past, November, being really frustrated over some situations that was going on with the job, some employees I had given another chance, but they didn't, because I'm like, okay, well, God is a God of a second chance. I'm learning patience and tolerance, but this person wasn't worthy of a second chance because they weren't trying to change. And I remember sharing with a coworker, wow, I wasn't this frustrated when I was smoking a crack. I was happy-go-lucky when I was smoking a crack. I said, and I'm just not willing to enter 2012 bound by frustration. So the process, again, began right back then. And through prayer and meditation, I knew that there's somebody out here in this audience that needs to hear what I'm saying. I know that it's good to share your triumphs, but you got to share your trials too. You got to let people know everything's not all right. But you got to let them know when you got some steps incorporated into your life, you can and you will make it to the other side victoriously. And so I share today to free myself, because I know that free people free people. And so I'm on a journey back with getting my life back in track, and my prayers, God, you know, help me to restore the balance that I once had in my life. Help me to reactivate and apply the Narcotics Anonymous tools that I have. I have a very loving and caring sponsor who doesn't judge me, who doesn't tell me where I need to be. She lets me tell her where I need to be, and then she holds me accountable for those changes to happen in my life. And so I got to a point where I wasn't willing to put me last anymore. I still want to build a business. I still want to help other people. But at the end of the day, the self-satisfaction has to be, what is Judy doing to make a difference in Judy's life? One of the things we do, we help broken families. We help little kids eat that would otherwise go hungry with food over the weekend. And there have been some times when I'm on this zeal to go out and help somebody else, because you see the codependency has kicked back in, set back in again, where everything and everybody else is more important than me. And I would just run right past my treadmill. And I had to check myself. I had to say, wait a minute. You're willing to forsake jumping up on the treadmill for you for 15 minutes, but run out and help save somebody else's life that you don't even know for 15 hours? Something's wrong with that picture. Because when I'm loving me, I'm able to make some more balanced choices in my life. Recovery means self-care. And I was like, golly, here I am, admitting I was a derelict, you know, when I was using the crack. But being a business owner, 16 years clean, you know, I got a house, I got a car that's paid for, I got some deodorant that I paid for, you know, I got some little bit of food. But daggone it, a derelict that ain't even used, because dereliction means abandoning self. And so I got in touch with that. And the good part is that when we got some steps in our life, we can get in touch with that. But the question is, how bad do you want it? You know, it's easy for me to say I love myself, but where's the proof? I got diagnosed a couple years ago with, you know, diabetes. And I didn't tell nobody, because I wanted to just keep on eating like I've been eating. And I would do silly stuff like, you know, go to buffets. Now, I tossed about sharing this piece, because now I can't go because somebody will see me in a buffet this weekend. But I would, you know, I can't a bit more go into a buffet than I could go in a crack house. Because I don't know how to eat rationally. My rationale was, I done spent $25, $30 for this buffet. There's all you can eat buffet, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to eat all I can. And then my friends would say, well, I thought you was on a diet. And I would say something silly like, I am on a diet. I'm on a seafood diet. All the food I see, I'ma eat. And I would think the shit was funny. I would be laughing myself on the way to an increased risk of killing myself. Clean. So like I said, I had to cry out to God. The same way I cried out to God and said, please, you know, this fire is hot. Come and get me. I had to cry out to that same God and say, stop the merry-go-round, I want to get off. I don't want to abandon myself anymore. I don't want to neglect myself anymore. Yes, it's important to help other people, but you got to help yourself first. What shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? She who conquers herself is greater than she who conquers a city. God is more interested in me conquering myself, all of that clutter in my room. Oh, don't y'all put me out there like that. I know somebody got some clutter in their room. God is more concerned with me conquering myself than he is with me going out and feeding a couple extra hundred of kids each week that I don't even know. So I'm on my way back to the balance. But I got to share about that to make sure I stay on the beam. I'm on the beam, and I got to make sure I stay on the beam. Because this is the self-inflicted stuff I'm talking about. So how about me having the power to work with the things that I've self-inflicted, the neglect, the getting back on the beam? How about those other things deep down on the inside that make me smile on the outside, but I'm hurting and crying on the inside? I'm talking about things like pertaining to that little girl that I told you about. That little girl that is happy that I got clean, but the little girl who is now 30 years old, and the little girl who in the beginning tried to hold me hostage to my past, you know, and I refused to let her hold me hostage to my past. That same little girl who told me 10 years ago that she was gay. And the funny thing is, you know, we learn in this program, sexual orientation doesn't mean anything. I've got some people in my circle, in my intimate circle, in my work circle, I could care less what their sexual orientation is. But I'm gonna tell you some real shit. It's different when it's my daughter. And so when she told me that she was gay, I freaked out. I knew it wasn't about me, but I hadn't got there yet. And maybe I could have had a different twist or a different acceptance level about her being gay if she, you know, still looked like a little girl. But she was running around dressing up like a little boy. And that was so hard for me because I was like, okay, well, if you're the boy, then where's this daughter that I always wanted, you know, to get back? You told me to do my part and get clean so we could have this relationship. And now I've gotten clean and I'm like, sexual preference is one thing, but, you know, she was running around dressing up like a little boy, and I was crying on the inside. You know, I didn't have a boy. I had a girl. Where the fuck is the little girl? But again, y'all told me acceptance and tolerance and unconditional love, so I worked at it real hard, and I was able to embrace her mate and smile and be friendly and be huggy all the time, wishing that that mate was a man. Smiling on the outside, hurting on the inside. And the thing about being in recovery, the miraculous thing about being in recovery is that we got the tools. And so I decided I was going to be a fool. I was going to use the tools of recovery. And the acceptance in that area gets better and better every day. You know, I was disappointed. That's my only child. You know, I wanted to be a grandmother. And I'm like, you know, because you know what self-centeredness is all about me. You know, never mind that this is her, what she's chosen. You know, I'm like all caught up in now. I'm not going to be a grandmother, you know. But the reality is that I do love her unconditionally. You know, that's the good piece. I don't think I could be there, you know, if I wasn't in recovery. You know, and I share in the meeting, you know, what a blessing it was to be in Ocean City and to be clean. But you want to know the real hit? It's my birthday today. It's my birthday today. So I get to be clean in Ocean City on my birthday, kicking a message of hope to somebody, saying that, yeah, a lot of times I'm still in pain, but if my pain can bring some gain to you, then my pain was not in vain. I'm here to kick a message of hope today to say that this program offers us the opportunity to change, contingent upon our willingness to do our part. Our literature tells us that any addict, black, any addict, white, any addict, gay, any addict,